Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio, the Jules. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules in beautiful and summery Southern California. Oh, have I got spring fever. This is my inner guidance telling me to get outside and dance in the sunlight. It's also telling me to do some spring cleaning in order to get the inside as fresh as the outside. So tomorrow I'm going to take the day off and I'm going to thoroughly enjoy myself doing the things that I have been putting off all winter. And this is probably the divine reason why we're having this incredible show tonight with international best-selling author and scientific journalist Lynn McTaggart. You know, I always like to procrastinate when it comes to dealing with emotions. I kind of like to sit in those emotions and then I get to a point where I say, okay, I've had enough of these feelings, time to shift. After reading Lynn McTaggart's newest book called The Bond, I am so better able to understand the true scientific basis of conflict. And it's because we have been led to believe that we are individuals and not connected to each other. Lynn McTaggart brings the scientific information to us today, and you will finally understand the makings of the governments around the world, religious wars, and even family conflicts. I can promise you many aha moments tonight, so get ready to explore her next best-selling book called The Bond, Connecting Through the Space Between Us. Excellent book. We'll be right back. You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at loaradionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with the mobile app as well, or just listen through your MP3 player or computer. Remember, loaradionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries, is the station for your well-being. The University of Attraction. Where else can you take free, interactive courses from international scientists, medical doctors, spiritual leaders, and experts in the field of the Law of Attraction? At the university, you will have your personal questions answered, enhance your intuitive skills, communicate with the angels, fill your life with music, and free meditation and hypnosis downloads. Sign up today. Go to loaradionetwork.com and click on the University of Attraction. The doors are wide open, waiting for you now. Here's the most incredible singles cruise ever. That's right. Law of Attraction Radio Network with SpiritualSingles.com and MatchMatrix.com is putting on the most incredible cruise full of fun and romance. No matter your age, size, ethnicity, or whether you're single or in a long-term relationship, join us to spark up your love life. Our four-night cruise starts on Thursday, October 27th. We set sail from Miami to Key West to Cozumel. Join our relationship experts, tantra experts, love angel communicator, energy healer, and our very own laughing yoga, who will be assisting you in making this the best adventure of your life into love. Rates start off at $5.99, which includes all of the workshops. There are balcony cabins still available, but you must sign up immediately. Rates will go up dramatically after March 28th. Don't wait. Sign up with your $150 refundable deposit and book your cabin now. Oh, and by the way, Don't forget to bring your costume for a wonderful evening of fun. Go to loaradionetwork.com and don't forget to tell us who referred you. We'll see you on board. Welcome back. This is Jules on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Hey, last week I told you that the cruise lines got our group rate extended, but that didn't turn out to be true. The cruise lines would not give us an extension, so I had to send out information to everybody that day that said, hey, you got to sign up by 3 o'clock today or else you're going to lose the great rates. Well, I managed to purchase some cabins on my own, so I do have cabins available. But I want to give all my male listeners a special opportunity. Because as always, we have more women coming on the cruise than we do men. So guys, if you are single and want to meet your soulmate, I will promise you the same low rate. Plus, you will be moved to the top of the list, so that you can get in. If you know of some guy that may not listen to the show, but is looking for that special person, then send him an email and tell him about this cruise. They will thank you over and over again. Have all your male friends send me an email at jules@loaradionetwork.com, and we will see how we can get them on immediately. Remember, that's jules@loaradionetwork.com. Next Sunday, we're going to be having Carl Johan Kalaman, PhD, who is the Mayan calendar scientist and expert, and he is going to knock your socks off with some incredible information about the Mayan calendar and all you need to know about the end of the Mayan calendar. Believe me, there is no doom or gloom to it. It's just things you need to be aware of in order to manifest a magnificent future. So now, let's get on with tonight's show with Lynn McTaggart. Many of you know Lynn through her book, The Intention Experiment and The Field. And you may also know her from her Intention Experiment website that have people from around the world focus on a particular item or person in which to scientifically register improvement. They had amazing documented results with water and the health of many people. Now Lynn McTaggart has written another best-selling book called The Bond. Frontier scientists are finally catching on to what ancient cultures have known for centuries, that the universe is an indivisible whole. Now, Lynn McTaggart, as a leading member of the mind-body-spirit community, has put together the first roadmap on how to live according to this new scientific story. This belief that the most essential impulse of human beings and all of life is to drive to wholeness is at the core of the bond connecting through the space between us. In fact, argues McTaggart, all the crises we face today, including financial recession, have occurred because the lives we've chosen to lead are not consistent with our true nature and our will to connect with everything around us. McTaggart states, currently we maintain this view of the universe as a place of scarcity populated by separate things that must turn against each other in order to survive. We've all simply assumed that's life. But that's not the story science is telling us anymore. And now, listeners, get ready for some intense insight into The Bond. And if you would like to purchase The Bond before it actually gets on the shelves, which I highly recommend, go to thebond.info where you can order your book now. Welcome, Lynn, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
First of all, Lynn, I've got to tell you that your book is magnificent in every way. And it gave me such tremendous aha moments, realizing that we are and have been focusing on us being individuals instead of connected. And that really, truly has screwed us all up.
Well, this is the thing. I think this is one of the most revelatory things about researching this book. I started out really asking the question, you know, were we meant to be so competitive with each other? And I started where I always start, with physics. And, you know, we believe and we operate according to the story we're told about who we are. And science writes one of the biggest stories about us. And scientists have to date tried to understand the universe by taking it apart, like a great big radio, and looking at its component parts. And they've been really searching in physics for the smallest thing in the universe. And, you know, the closer and closer they get to subatomic matter, they keep finding smaller and smaller things until what they really realize they're finding is not things, but relationships, and only a relationship. And basically, what we are is not a collection of things out there, but one big, vast, intergalactic relationship.
So what we have been talking on this show for at least 2 to 3 years now, and what science has just verified, is that we are all connected. We truly are one.
Well, you know, yes. And in fact, we can only understand ourselves and each other in this relationship.
So what I read in your book is that our natural instinct is really to belong, to seek people out who agree with us.
Well, I think this is, you know, we've been imbued with this idea that we were born to be selfish, we were born to be competitive, we were born to be individual, but actually, we've been living a lie. You know, nature has a irrepressible drive for wholeness, is what I learned, and in people, that expresses itself in the fact that we thrive when we share, care, and are fair. We don't. We get into crisis when we are competitive, and that's exactly what's happening today.
Boy, that's for sure. We have crisis we face now in many areas of our life, from the economy to politics to the environment to religious wars. And you state that these are because we are acting against nature.
Yes, exactly. When we act with nature, when we understand that we're part of a whole and that we're meant to share, care, and be fair, when we're meant to connect and to value the connection and the relationship above the individual, when we change our perspective from me to us, then we thrive. It's as simple as that.
So let's talk about conflict. You state that in order to resolve the conflict, we need to put on their shoes so that we are understanding where they're coming from. We need to look at their side of the story, not just us. We need to go beyond what our perception is and actually come from where they are coming from.
Even, yes, and even more fundamentally, to see the other point of view. I mean, we don't. We're so used to looking at for the individual thing that we see in a very piecemeal way. I'll give you an example of this. There is a guy I know called Mark Gerson who's worked with the UN and Congress and things, and he works with groups in conflict. And he works with a group that is Palestinian group that contains both Israelis and Palestinians. And he said, how can you work together so well? And they said, we've learned to live with paradoxes. And he said, what do you mean? And they said, well, okay, as an example, let's each tell you what we think about the birth of Israel. So first it's the Palestinian's turn, and he writes a paragraph about it that is called The Disaster. And it talks about the terrible things that happened and how the Palestinians were booted out of their homeland, et cetera, et cetera. The Israeli guy writes the historic day of independence, and he writes about that you know, Israel fulfilled its destiny of having a place for the Jewish people, except they were, from that moment that they were, the UN sanctioned this, they were beleaguered on all sides from attacks, etc. Now, the awful thing of it is, and the reason for enduring conflict there, is that both versions of this truth are true. Both versions are correct. And so one of the things that's really important about really reestablishing our relationships is taking what I call aerial vision, is being able to stand above and to see that both versions are correct, and to value the relationship and the space in between, to find that space in between where you understand the other person's point of view. But that's all about taking a really different perspective. That's about saying it's not so important to be right. It's important to do what I need to do to serve this relationship. I'll give you another example. There's a guy called Orlin Bishop. He's doing the, you know, it would seem the impossible. He's working with young gang members in Watts, people in rival gangs, and teaching them how to relate to each other. And, you know, this would seem to be a fool's errand. We're talking about, you know, kids who have come from pretty rough backgrounds. But what he does is he teaches them to be whatever needs to be to help the other person to thrive. And part of this is about talking in, you know, really deep truthfulness, telling the other person some, you know, not about trying to be right, not about creating, you know, a competition in a relationship or a conversation, but about really sharing what's really important to you. And you find when you start doing that, that the differences fade away because you're really talking about something deep. And differences don't matter with that. You're talking about your truth and the other person's talking about their truth. And you start finding connection.
Wow, that's really, really fascinating. And I believe it. Because I have developed a close relationship with a guy named Raza in Pakistan through the internet. We're able to converse back and forth. And we were able to discover our commonality. We were able to agree with each other and find the goodness and know exactly what we desire in our different cultures is exactly the same. So I think that is what you're trying to convey too.
Absolutely, and finding that, you know, finding common ground because, you know, we're hardwired to connect in every way. We're hardwired to connect. I mean,
wow, that's wonderful. Isn't that amazing? I never put the two and two together.
I mean, when you and I see somebody else, you know, let's say we see somebody else playing a game, the very same neurons in our heads that would fire if we were kicking the ball fire when we see somebody else kicking the ball. And similarly, the very same neurons, when we observe someone else having an emotion, positive or negative, the very same neurons in our own heads fire as if we were having that emotion. So the point is, we were hardwired to connect with other people by merging their thoughts and our thoughts. And we connect on so many other ways. We have a real need to belong to other people, with other people, to belong in groups. We have a need to give. We have a need to be aware of the other person, to agree with other people. We have a need to be fair. All of this is hardwired within us. And so we automatically are connecting, even when people are very different. It's happening without our even knowing it. And so all we have to do is open that space between to allow this connection, this real connection to happen. But that also moves beyond, it means moving beyond our definition of the relationship, which is, you know, at the moment we have a definition of the relationship of being with a whole bunch of eyes, you know, finding people who are just like me. Mm-hmm. Connecting with people who are only like me, considering them the only us. And considering the other people, them. So, you know, it means changing our definition of our relationship and then changing the way we relate to other people so that we can allow, you know, with this kind of connection, differences don't matter anymore.
So if people are seeking others who agree with them, what do we do about disagreements? Do we agree to disagree and not get upset about it? It's a little confusing here.
No, we don't have to agree with everything. We just have to make disagreeing not bad. You know, we have to make disagreeing, just acknowledging that, but not making that the most important. We have to make agreement not being the most important thing, or disagreement being the worst thing. We have to make being the connection, whatever that is, being important. But as I say, right now, we define connection as only sameness. But actually, connection is connection. You're connecting with people whether you like it or not. They're being affected by you. You're being affected by them. We know it with every connection we make with someone else. We are connecting with them, whether we even know them. And so if you just open yourself to the most important thing being that relationship, that connection, not being right, being first, being individual, then you connect with people whether they're like you or not, whether or not they're Muslim or Christian, whether or not they're Democratic or Republican. It doesn't matter.
Well, I'm anxious to talk to you about governments and agreements and disagreements, because they don't have a clue of this scientific study, evidently. First, why do you believe there is such a thing as survival of the fairest?
Because we have it hardwired into our brains. It's not fair portion of the brain, actually. And we are, there's been studies demonstrating that when things aren't fair, it bothers us. And this is why we have this outrageous response to the whole banking crisis, because it felt very unfair that certain people would make enormous profits when other people were suffering. You know, people don't mind differences in income, but what people mind is unfairness, unfair situations, and that's what causes people to rise up. So we have this hard wiring about fairness, and they find it. There's a game called the ultimatum game, you know, that is played. It's one of those economic games with game theory. It's been played around the world and studied, where it just goes like this. Let's say you get two people who have never met each other and they're never going to meet again. And you give one of them, person A, $10. And you tell them, you can give whatever you want to give of that sum to person B. And it's a one-shot offer. And person B can accept it or reject it. And if he rejects it, nobody gets any money. So usually, you know, you would think that the usual thing would be for person A to keep most of the money and person B to accept whatever he's given, because something is better than nothing. Actually, it's been played all around the world, and the most common thing is 50-50. Mm. 50-50. People want to be fair. And it comes, you know, and all kinds of games like this show that when left to their own devices, people inherently take turns. So we have that. But the problem we have now is life in the West is more unfair than it ever has been in our history. You know, for instance, in America, we've got, you know, half of all the world's billionaires are in America. And, you know, I think it's one in every 39 people is a millionaire, but 39 million people in America also live below the poverty line. And so with this kind of situation, the problem is everybody loses, rich and poor. There have been some studies by epidemiologists looking at the situation. They find when an area is very unfair, when there's this huge disparity, all social indicators suffer for all the rich and the poor. For instance, when you've got these unfair conditions, as we do now in America, you get problems with crime, you get problems with health care, you get problems with education. All those social indicators are worse for rich and for poor. And it's the same all through Europe. And the sad thing is now, with America still being one of the richest countries in the world, we are at the bottom of all their social indicators. We have all the worst problems of any of 16 nations, you know, all the nations of the West. And that has a lot to do with this giant disparity, this real sense of unfairness, because I think we feel it in our bones. So I'm not talking about socialism. I'm not talking about everybody getting just the same. I'm talking about things being unfair and this going against nature and against our sense of what's right and our fundamental being. And all of us walk around feeling like something, our very humanity, has been left at the door.
I agree. I'm going to be the first one to say, yes, wait a minute. Things are not fair. It doesn't feel good. But how do we resolve it, even if we can identify it? Do you think that people are going to catch on to this?
I think people are recognizing we're in crisis. And one of the reasons that I wrote The Bond was to tell people that we can, you know, first of all, that nature naturally drives for wholeness, and that we survive and thrive precisely when we share care and our fare. And when we don't, when we do what we're doing now, where it's every man for himself, that's when we get into crisis. That's our biggest problem. So we have to change the way we do things, and we have to change four things fundamentally. We have to change the way we perceive the world, so we're not just looking for things, we're not just looking for me. We have to change the way we view relationships, so we're not just about being right or selecting people who are just like me. We have to change the way we organize in small groups, you know, our neighborhoods or companies or whatever, so that we're working for the whole and not just for me. And we also have to change our fundamental purpose on Earth. So it's not just about getting for ours and ours alone, but for supporting the whole in some way or another. So all of those things are part of recovering the bond.
Okay, now I want to talk about the government, because it doesn't seem that the government is working for the people. It seems like there's Democrats and Republicans, liberals and conservatives, and then there's people in the middle, and nobody's listening to each other, nobody's agreeing, and they are fighting to be right, and we're at a standstill. What can we do?
Absolutely. Well, I think one of the problems we have is we're sitting here and we're sitting back waiting for the government to do something. We're waiting for the right president.
Yes.
We're waiting for the right Congress. We're waiting for Congress to speak to each other. And Congress certainly isn't looking at the situation in terms of we. I mean, no congressman is looking at what needs to be done in terms of what's good for all Americans. They're thinking about what's good for Republicans or what's good for Democrats.
Right.
And that's it. You know, no one's looking at the whole. So the people in charge aren't doing it, and we don't need that. We need to start small and start right here, right now, with you and with me. And that's where we start healing America, not by waiting for these guys in charge to do it. And it doesn't take, you know, we think about it being such a hard thing. But let me give you an example of why it's not hard. First of all, scientists understand that it just takes a few instigators to change the whole. And I'll give you an example of this. There's a game, I talked before about games, mm-hmm. There's a game called the Public Works game that they play to see what happens. And everybody's given a certain amount of money. And they say, okay, you can put you put a portion of your money, let's say everybody gets $10, you put a portion of that into a pot for the whole, and then it'll get redistributed out equally among all of you. So initially, everybody gives half their money in for the pot. Everybody's really generous, and it all gets distributed. But then they notice that one or two people are freeloaders, and they don't put anything in. So this starts, because it's unfair, this starts getting the rest of the people pissed off, and they say, I'm not going to put any money in. And so everybody stops, and nobody puts money into the pot, and the whole thing falls apart. And so what scientists have discovered is all it takes is one or two what they call strong reciprocators, people who are really, you know, who are instigators, who want to create fairness, to invade this kind of population of self-interested people, and it turns the whole thing around, and everybody starts sharing again. They've also found something else that's interesting. We know from lots of studies that we're really infectious to other people. You know, our actions, positive or negative, become very infectious in any community. And they found that if one person is generous and does some sort of pay it forward activity, one act of kindness, that kindness ripples down 3 degrees along a network, which means if I'm kind to you, you're more likely to be kind to your friend, they're more likely to be kind to their friend, and they're more likely to be kind to their friend. So my act of kindness to you goes to your friends' friends, and your friends' friends' friends. So that one act of kindness ripples all the way down, and you can just imagine what happens when those guys are kind. Then they're also rippling down the network too. So I'll give you a concrete example of this. In an office, there was a woman who decided she was going to do something every day. She was going to buy her Coke as usual on her coffee break, and she was going to leave the change in the machine. So it would be there for the next person. She left a little card saying, you know, this change has been left for you. Pay it forward. Now, this completely baffled all of the coworkers. They couldn't figure out who was doing this. Who was the secret Santa? So they set up a committee. It was like a neighborhood watch to scour and keep a watch to see who was leaving the change. But she was a pretty canny individual. So after doing this for a while, she decided to escalate operations, and she started leaving donuts in the floor above, just leaving them anonymously every day. Now, this completely changed the culture of that office. Everybody started giving. Everybody started leaving kind things for each other. Everybody started talking about it home at night. It completely changed the conversation. And it's that one act of kindness that just started having a ripple effect all through the community. So that's one idea. Mm-hmm. Another idea is what is called a superordinate goal. And I'll explain this by explaining some of the psychologists who discovered this and experimented with this in one of the most beloved experiments in psychology history. It was called the Robber's Cave Experiment, and it was carried out with a batch of Midwestern 12-year-old boys. And they were selected to be just normal kids. They were got together in two groups and sent to this camp in different buses. Each group was given a different name, the Rattlers and the Eagles, and they never set eyes on each other, but they were encouraged to create their own separate identity, their own flags, their own costumes. They were bunked in separate places, so they had separate cabins, and then they were told they were going to compete in very, very competitive games with each other. And the counselors, who were all psychologists in disguise, started creating games and having neck-and-neck scores so that they were very competitive against each other. By the end of the games, and one set of one group got a prize and the other group didn't. Well, by the end of it, they were fighting with each other. They were beating each other up. The losing group stole the winner's prizes, et cetera, et cetera. So now the psychologist said, okay, let's see if we can reverse this competition we have engineered. And what they did was they started creating crises in the camp that could only be solved by the collective effort of the whole group of boys. Like they had a big boulder that stopped the supply of water that could only be removed if all the boys helped lift it, and so on. And they found that this thawed relations. All of a sudden, the boys started getting along. All of a sudden, they started eating together. All of a sudden, they wanted to ride home together. And one of the boys used all of his pocket money to buy ice creams for the whole lot of them on the way home. And so this gave them an idea that when you have what they call the superordinate goal, a goal that can only be affected by the teamwork of everyone involved, this not only creates, you know, gets the job done, but also creates closeness in the community.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I know you wrote this book before the great earthquake in Japan, but what you're saying is similar to what the Japanese people are now going through. They're bonding together to rebuild.
Exactly. And, you know, you find this over and over again in situations where, you know, people get together for a common goal, and it makes for closeness. There was a group, there was a little community, Tailholt, Oklahoma. where the Cherokee Nation, the people who were part of the Cherokee Nation there, were trying to get money from the federal government to get decent water pipeline because they just didn't have good enough drinking water. And there was just no federal money, and they kept being refused. So they finally decided to do it themselves. So a whole bunch of the guys just, you know, volunteered to do the digging to put in the pipeline themselves. They got a small grant for it, and the women started cooking them lunch every day, and they built the pipeline, but also they built a community. I mean, the community hadn't been close at all before that, and suddenly the whole thing came together. And this community action started getting infectious, and they got together and then built a great big community center. They started volunteering for the, you know, volunteer fire department, and, you know, the community got close as a result of just working together. Yeah. And they also got the job done.
One of the things I really like about the bond is that you back up all of your statements with scientific experiments that worked. Very fascinating. One of the things I really loved reading about was the mirroring of each other and the animals and how they mirror actions and emotions. So that leads me to the Chilean miners. When we saw this incredible emotion arise around the world with absolute joy in seeing each person being rescued.
Absolutely. I mean, we were made to feel that way. And I think the reason that we were also moved by the Chilean miners was another case of a superordinate goal because, you know, the Chilean miners, first of all, they worked together. They were fair. They all shared, even when they had almost no food. They shared together, and they all had the goal. They realized that their survival was not only good for themselves individually, but good for the group and good for their country. And so that was, I mean, that gave us this real feel-good sense of people pulling together for a common goal. You know, it's in our DNA. It's there for us. We know we thrive when we share and we care. And there is just another and a better way. We see it in Japan. We're also moved by this because in our hearts, this is who we really are. And we have somehow got misdirected into thinking that we have to fight and struggle and compete in order to survive. But scientists now are realizing that that's not really the case, that we are, you know, we are connected at so many different levels with the rest of the universe that it's, you know, we can't operate ourselves. We have to work together. And we thrive when we do.
Great point. You know, while reading The Bond, I kept on referring back to the intention experiment and how you were able to show the world that the power of us collectively, our mental power, to make improvements to water, to the health of others. This, again, is showing how powerful we are collectively as opposed to individually.
Well, you know, it was really interesting to me. Just by accident, my husband and I, when we started doing intention workshops, wanted to figure out how do we show intention over a weekend. So we decided to split our audience into small groups of 8 to 12 and have them send intention as the group to people within that group who had a healing challenge. And we started to watch what happened. First of all, the people who had healing challenges felt amazingly better. And we were shocked by this because we, you know, we hadn't put it forward as any healing miracle or anything like that. But nevertheless, miracles were happening. We were hearing of people who had, you know, I had one woman with an opacity in one eye that obscured her vision by about 80%, and she suddenly had hugely better vision in that eye. And we had people with arthritis who were barely walking, who were skipping up and down stairs the next day. It was stuff like that that was astonishing us. But also we were really interested in what was happening to the senders too. Things were happening to them psychologically and things were happening to them physically. We found, for instance, that people who, the senders, were also getting better with their health challenges. And they also had a big change of attitude once they'd participated in this group. They found, I was polling people too. I've taken surveys with people who participate in these groups or in our big intention experiments, and found that people feel much more loving toward other people, but particularly toward strangers. And I just thought, wow, this is just, again, this kind of sense of coming together that is our natural thing. We feel naturally so good about being part of a group that it becomes a big healer. So I'm not sure it's even the intention. I think it's about the community that becomes so powerful. Mm. And it really fascinated me to find that my husband was doing some research on the Essenes and on Jesus, and he found that this was a typical practice in the Essenes, is these intention, small intention groups, and they would be sending healing intention to each other, and it used to work. So I think it's been an ancient practice that we sort of stumbled on to use this power of community to be a healing and a healing circle and a healing mechanism.
Wow, I love this. I want to let all of the listeners know, if you're joining us right now, you are listening to the Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules, and we are interviewing Lynn McTaggart with her newest and, I predict, best-selling book, The Bond. And if you'd like to go and order the book right now, simply go to thebond.info. Lynn, I want to go back and make sure everyone heard this, because I think it's so important. In order to resolve the conflicts or to improve the situation, we need to start off small. That means going into our neighborhoods and making a difference there, bonding.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things about seeing, you know, we can start seeing, we're taught to look for the individual thing and to see in such a piecemeal way. But we can start understanding the whole by a few simple practices. I mean, I go through a number of practices and stories in The Bond that people can really learn in full by following that. And I also have programs that we're going to have available on our new website, which is www.thebond.net, for bringing this into your life. But some of the ways that I can talk about right now are simply starting with something like mindfulness meditation, where you just take where you are a few times a day, wherever you are, and just be present with all of your five senses. So you're just, if you're, you know, eating your breakfast, you just do that with all of your five senses and listen to it, taste it, you know, just be aware of the listening, the taste, the smells, the sights, the feel of all of it, without thinking about other stuff, because usually we're lost in thought about what's going to happen or what has happened, whatever. Just be present to that, and be present to that, you know, 3-4 times a day, little 5-minute intervals, and you'll start seeing that you're noticing more subtle connection between things. So it's about learning a lot of different skills about seeing the whole and seeing aerial vision, as I mentioned, with relationships and even forgiveness, learning how to meet people in the space between, to do what you need to do to foster the relationship rather than simply being right, to stretch out of your comfort zone to relate to people who are not like you and find the connections rather than looking for what's different on superficial levels. Because on that deep connection, we're all the same. As you said, your Pakistani correspondent, you find with away from those superficial differences, deep connections. And then with your community, very important to start looking for these small goals, these superordinate goals that you require teamwork to achieve at your office, in your neighborhood. And then finally, starting with small, making your purpose, connecting with the whole rather than just doing for you and yours alone. Now, all of us have to earn a living now. So I'm not talking about giving up your job or anything like that. But that doesn't have to be your primary purpose. Your primary purpose for living and breathing can be about connection and connecting and the bond. And making the bond is all about small acts that have a huge effect, a ripple effect in the world. So when you say, well, what can I do? The government's broken, you know, I'm disappointed in the president, or I like the president and I'm disappointed in the Congress, or whatever. That's not the point. The point is starting here, starting now, with whatever you can do. And whatever you can do can be all about organizing your neighborhood to do something. Can be, we organized our neighborhood to stop a cell phone company from putting tower blocks all over, cell towers all around our neighborhood. And by doing that, our neighborhood got really close. It's about doing something, leaving that change in that Coke machine, taking out your neighbor's garbage, who you don't speak to, offering to take care of his neighbor, his or her children, you know, reaching across the aisle to somebody who's different from you and just making a connection, making a new friend, you know, seeing past those superficial differences. All of those things are part of the bond. Each and every way, just doing one little act like that a day, and you could transform your neighborhood.
Yes, as you said, pay it forward is now more important than ever.
Absolutely. And I mean, people, there's a really interesting guy called Nipun Mehta, who started an organization called Charity Focus. And initially they started with a bunch of techies from Silicon Valley whose idea was to build websites for charities for free. And then he started experimenting with generosity. You know, for instance, he got his parents to allow Wednesdays where people get together and anybody can show up, any stranger show up at their house, come in and get a free meal and participate in an evening meditation where they read a passage, they meditate, they discuss, and they have a meal together. And there's about 50 every week, new people, rich and poor. They've done this for years now. Not one article of anything has been stolen. They have an open library where people can just take the books. People give more books back than they take. And now they've tried it with a restaurant where it's called Karma Kitchen, where you go in and you pay nothing for your meal. They've taken over a restaurant on Sundays for Sunday lunch. What you do is you pay it forward. So your lunch is paid for. You pay forward for the next person.
Wow.
Now, just changing that, people come from all over the world to experience an act of giving, like a free lunch with paid that somebody has bought for them. And it changes the currency completely.
Wow.
You know, you could say, well, we're just paying for the next guy, so actually we are paying. What ends up happening is people are more generous than they would be if they were just buying their own lunch. They pay more than they would be. They're moved to tears. They're constantly saying, well, what can I do here? How can I help? What else can I do? It completely changes the whole emphasis. It's about giving and sharing, the thing we were meant to be. And suddenly people, you know, the look on their faces speaks it all. It's like, this is what I'm supposed to be. This is what it really means to be a human being.
Wow, that is so incredible. It just gave me goosebumps to think that people will actually pay more for someone else. It kind of makes me want to jump up and start a restaurant where you can pay it forward. I just love this.
You know, you can do that on a smaller scale. You know, not all of us can set up a restaurant, but we can do this on a small scale, whether it is just, you know, making generosity and connection the currency of your life, not about getting and spending as the currency of your life. And you start on that path, and you see what ends up happening, and it becomes infectious.
You know, just on a side note, paying it forward is also the metaphysical prosperity consciousness that we have often talked about on this show, in that you can't really get until you give, and I think this is the concept. Lynn, please tell people how they can get your book and go to your website in which you're going to be doing all these fantastic things.
It is www.thebond.net.
Okay, thebond.net. But if you want to buy the book now, before it actually goes on sale, you go to thebond.info. Lynn, tell us some of the things that you're going to be doing on thebond.net site.
We have an interactive program that's being built now, and in fact, our, you know, our website will be available. It's available with the release of the book April 19th, and shortly after that, we will have available programs that people can participate with that are interactive programs, enabling them to take the bond into their lives. So they will be, they will have guides on it, working with them, helping them. I'll be connecting with them to take certain missions that they need to fulfill in their lives to learn how to do this on a daily basis. Because as I say, we've been all programmed with the wrong information about the fact that we have to compete and fight and that life is a struggle, and, you know, whether it's being a struggle against our neighbor who, you know, who drives a Mercedes when we just drive a Volvo or a Ford, or competing against each other in school, or competing against the guys who want to take your job at work. All of that has been the mindset and the mentality up to now, and that's got us where we are today. But the new mindset, the mindset that should have always have been there, was that actually nature has designed us only in wholeness. And when we embrace that, embrace the bond, and we operate with nature and not against nature, we survive and thrive. And that's what our program will be teaching people how to do. That's what my book is all about, The Bond.
Oh, Lynn McTaggart, thank you. On behalf of the listeners, thank you. Thank you for giving us the insight to see more inside of ourselves, to resolve the conflicts, to resolve the crisis, to start paying it forward. Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure having you on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you. It's a real pleasure always to be on your show.
Thanks, Lynn. So, listeners, I have learned so much today, didn't you? I learned that we can make a difference by starting small and affecting change locally as it ripples out to the world. I learned that if we take the first step to see another's perspective, then we will be able to find the commonality of the issue in which to build from. I learned that we must make it okay to agree to disagree, but to still continue to work. We must make it acceptable to allow disagreement and still remain friends and family. And I learned that we are hardwired to belong and to belong to a community in which to work for the betterment of all. You know, a few weeks ago, we talked to Joe Dunning, who stated to us that now we must start focusing in on not so much how to manifest for ourselves, but how to manifest for the greater good of all. And now it makes so much sense. You know, a few years ago we were taught about our individual power to create our reality. Now we have evolved to the absolute belief that we, as Neil Donald Walsh told us, the super string theory, that from the smallest part of a subatomical atom, we are all one and all connected. This is our shift of consciousness. And there's one more thing. Each week, you keep coming back, and each week, you continue to evolve with me. We have built this wonderful community in which we're evolving, and each one of you are so important to this world. I can't thank you enough, because it is through you collectively that we are truly manifesting a wonderful new world in which everyone thrives. Oh, I love you all. I look forward to next week and talking with you again. And next week, don't forget, we're talking with Carl Kalluman. I got to tell you, it's a show you're not going to want to miss. Thank you all. Have a wonderful week. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with another great show. For more information, go to lawofattractiontools.com or contact Jules personally at Jules@LOARadionetwork.com.